This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD, Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 3, String Contention, Objections, and Disputes call held on the 26th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
It's Cheryl. I'm only on audio at the moment, but I'll see you in a minute. Going on mute.
Thank you, Cheryl. And hearing no more names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I will turn it back over to Karen Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everyone. This is Karen Day for the record. Our co-chair, Robin, is away on vacation today, so I'll be going it alone. Today we are going to be on the topic of string similarity. But first, let's take a quick look at our agenda, proposed agenda. We'll do our customary review of SOI updates. We will call on our plenary co-chair for an update from the main session. And then we will jump into our subject for the day, string similarity, looking at our CC2 comments, looking at a proposal that we had for dealing with some of the issues from the registries, and then any other business that anyone would like to add. Does anyone have any other business that they know of at this time that they'd like to go ahead and put on the agenda? Seeing none, seeing no hands, seeing nothing in the chat. Does anyone have any updates to their statement of interest that they need to make us aware of at this time? Again, seeing no hands and seeing no one typing in the chat, we will move on. Today we have Aubrey Doria with us, one of our co-chairs, soon to be tri-chairs, I guess we would call it, of the plenary session. Aubrey, can you come in and give everyone an update on activities of the full working group?
Sure. This is Aubrey speaking. Hopefully I can be heard. So, yes, you already mentioned the first item, which is we reached consensus on appointing Cheryl Langdon Orr as the third co-chair. So provisionally she is the third co-chair because of the PDP working group guidelines and methods. We need to vet that with the GNSO Council, so we'll be asking for it to be put on the consent agenda of the next meeting. I welcome her as the third co-chair, and I believe that she's functioning in that role, waiting for the approval, but that isn't really seen as much of an issue. We went through the four working team reports, which were fairly straightforward, and there were no questions or issues brought up in relation to them. We then spoke about Workstream 5 and its state of preparations. It looks like at least three out of the four are getting close to the point of having CCNSO has already appointed someone, and both ALAC and GAC seem to be in their final approval processes and should be announcing any time. They might have already. I haven't checked my email yet this morning. On the GNSO choice for that, there seems to still be some confusion about how we're to do it, so those discussions are ongoing about how exactly we pull it off. So perhaps, ironically, the GNSO will be the last one to come up with a co-chair for this particular work team. We then spent the bulk of the meeting talking about one of the documents from the overarching issue on basically on categories, and got into some detailed conversations on some of the aspects of categories and attributes of categories and how we mix all that. Discussion is ongoing on those. That's about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. And I note a comment in the chat from Alan Greenberg. Alan, would you like to come on? And I'm assuming this relates to Work Track 5?
Yes, I was just noting that we have announced who we've selected as co-leader, and it's Christopher Wilkinson, formerly involved with the GAC, a long history in country-related things, although many years out of date at this point, and hopefully in a position to help bring consensus to the group.
Thank you for that, Alan. I'll look for the email.
All right. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions for Aubrey while we are on the plenary update? Ann notes in the chat that plenary chair said they would be seeking permission from the nominees to disclose their names. That was noted yesterday in the call, so we'll should probably hear some follow-up on that in the coming week. Aubrey, yes.
I just wanted to indicate that I gave a quick summary of where we were, and I talked about the discussions being ongoing. There's many levels of detail I could have gone in, but then I might have taken up this entire meeting. So thank you.
Thanks, Aubrey. Appreciate it. All right. Anything else before we move on into our subject matter today? If not, all right. The first thing I'm going to do is ask Steve Chan if he can put up his data that he has just finished compiling for us with regards to plurals and singles. This was a Jeff Newman is not on the call today, but Jeff had reminded us during our leadership call this past week that in previous discussions, and the last time we were on the subject matter of singulars and plurals and string similarity was back in February, that a request had been made to look at how many of the singular-plural combinations that were from the last round ended up being owned by the same registry. And so staff very graciously did some research, pulled some rough data together for us. And so for those of you that had interest in knowing that, I thought I would let Steve go ahead and just present you just the rough numbers that he was able to come up with here at the beginning, so you could sort of keep those in the back of your mind as we go through our comments and factor those in to your thought process as we work through the day. Steve, would you like to tell us what you got?
Sure. Thanks, Karen. This is Steve Chan from STEF. As Karen mentioned, STEF did some manual analysis on the strings. So we actually looked at the currently delegated strings, so we didn't actually look at the application submitted. And so what we came up with is there are, I believe, 21 pairs of singulars and plurals, which you'll see here. And so the specific question that was asked actually was circumstances where there are singulars and plurals and the owners are the same. And so for that circumstance, we noted that there's only four pairs of those. And then further, we tried to determine how that same ownership came about. And from what we could tell, it seems that car-cars was as a result of merger and acquisition. Deal, is that it? Fan and Fans was an acquisition. Ryzen, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, is also acquisition. And there's the last one that was actually came in with the same ownership, which was Supply and Supplies. So some very quick research that we did. Hopefully it's helpful. We'll get this data posted to the wiki. It's not there yet, but it will be soon. Hopefully it's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Does anyone have any questions for Steve about this while we've got this up on display? All right, then. Not seeing anything in the chat. Let's see. One thing in the chat, Aubrey. Okay. Yeah, that was an offline chat last night. All right, then. Emily, Julie, if we could go ahead and load up our CC2 theme document for string similarity, we will get going on our questions for today. All right. I believe the document is unlocked, so people can scroll at their leisure. But we will start here with question 341. There was a perception that consistency and predictability of the string similarity evaluation needs to be improved. Do you have examples or evidence of issues? If so, do you have suggested changes to the policy recommendations or implementation that may lead to improvement? For instance, should the standard of string confusion that the evaluation panel used be updated or refined in any way? The highlight here is that INTA, the BC, the registries, the brand registry group, affiliates, and the ALAC all provided suggestions for improving string similarity evaluation with respect to singulars and plural. And the excerpts are consolidated below. INTA and the non-commercial stakeholder group recommended a longer period of time between the string similarity review and the deadline to file a string confusion objection. Here are some of the excerpts. Additional time needs to be allowed for possible objections between the string similarity review and the deadline to file string confusion objection. In the first round, only 2 weeks were allowed for parties to consider filing a string confusion objection based on the results of string similarity review. INTA recommends exploring additional ways of tolling the deadline, e.g., tolling the deadline to file a string confusion objection by 30 days from issuance of a decision in a string similarity review. The next comment we have is, last but not least, there should be a longer period for applicants to submit string confusion objections based on string similarity review, given the possibility of receiving delayed reviews caused by unique factors such as the high volume of unique strings. That was from the non-commercial stakeholders group. The National Association of Boards of Pharmacy stated that where there is verified TLD in a particular industry sector, any string in the same industry sector should have the same or substantially similar restrictions to address possible confusion. NABP points out that string confusion may also arise when two strings are synonyms, even if they are not forms of the same word, e.g., doctor and physician. NABP recommends that where there is a verified TLD in a particular industry sector, any string matching another string applied for string or an existing string, including translations thereof in the same industry sector, should have, at a minimum, the same or substantially similar restrictions as the verified TLD. The RYSG, the BRG, affiliates, and Google recommend eliminating the SWORD tool. There was little correlation between the SWOT results and the actual outcome of the string similarity review and the string confusion objection process, and thus that tool was more misleading to applicants than it was helpful. Excuse me. lost my place here. I'm sorry. Further, it appeared that the scores produced by the SWOT tool were changed partway through the application process, resulting in further confusion to the applicants. We recommend that ICANN do away with the SWOT tool that was presented to the applicants as a part of the 2012 round. We support several of the recommendations made by the registries to bring greater clarity and rigor to the string similarity review process, including the elimination of the SOAR tool. This is from Google. The non-commercial stakeholders group provided feedback that string evaluation should be consistent and effective at avoiding confusion and promoting confidence through fair resolution mechanisms. String evaluation should be consistent and effective in avoiding confusion and loss of confidence in the DNS with the eventual delegation of strings similar to existing TLDs or reserve names. Therefore, the adoption of efficient and fair resolution mechanisms is key. Okay, so we have quite a few suggestions here, one of which very specific, doing away with the SOAR tool. Also have that I recirculated.
Karen, don't. Karen.
Michael, yes.
I don't mean to butt in, but we've got a. I think Paul McGrady's had his hand up for quite a while, I just wanted to ask: are we stopping in between comments, or are we just going to go through each section and read all the comments, and then go back through and then each individual's or ask for opinions or comments in regards to those?
Yeah, I did see Paul put his hand up after I had read about three words of the first sentence, so I was going to, I assumed he wanted to speak on the subject and was going to come back to him. My intent was to deal with each question as a whole, so we're just wrapping up on the first question, and then I was going to come to Paul. What I was going to say was that in addition to these comments and the CC2, we had some suggestions for dealing with additional suggestions for dealing with string similarities that were circulated on the list and presented to us back in February by the registries. So now let's discuss these suggestions and see if we have some consensus or some similarities of opinions on a path forward. Paul, please go ahead.
Thanks, Karen. Paul McGrady for the record. I wanted to report back because we finally have come back to the string similarity issue. Several weeks ago, you asked me if I could develop a unified definition or framework within which to determine whether or not strings are similar, both in the context of comparing them against prior strings that have already been delegated, and also in the context of comparing them against trademarks in the rights claim mechanism. I just wanted to report back that I didn't ignore the instruction. I struggled with it for about 2 weeks. And unfortunately, I've come to the conclusion that, when you compare two generic terms that are not tied to any trademarks, so, for example, dot hammer for a pre-existing TLD that is used.
Paul, we lost your audio there.
It
Either I'm disconnected or there's completely dead air.
Hi, Paul. We lost your audio there for a second. Are you back? Paul?
Hi there. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now. Great.
Yes, we can hear you now. Great. Okay, sorry about that. I decided to turn off my phone and try to go via the computer. The phone is usually more reliable than the computer, but apparently not today. I'm not sure where my speech left off, but the bottom line is, as I was comparing, trying to develop a unified framework for string similarity in relationship to, see if I could find one that fit both for generic term TLDs, and I apologize if I already gave the example, but I think it's important, so I'll give it again. You know, comparing an application for a new gTLD dot hammers, which will be used to sell hammers, against a pre-existing gTLD already delegated for dot hammer, for a gTLD that's being used to sell hammers, is a very different analysis than comparing a pre-existing gTLD consisting of a trademark, or comparing one gTLD consisting of a trademark against another gTLD consisting of a trademark, but only one of it is used for its dot brand purpose. Unfortunately, the two concepts, because trademarks are tied to goods and services and to sort of consumer knowledge of what they do, comparing generic terms versus branded terms against what could be a potential generic term or could be an infringement, that's the point of the analysis to determine. There is no, unfortunately, simple, trite way to do that, and I don't think it's possible to match up these two concepts. And so I just wanted to report back that I hadn't ignored the request. But I don't think that the two concepts are similar enough in order to develop one framework for both. Unfortunately, it seems to me we'll have to develop a confusion paradigm for each of the two if we think that we got it wrong in the last round. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. Coming back to that. Does anyone, before I come to Michael in the queue, does anyone have any follow-up on that particular aspect on that subject? All right. Michael, go ahead.
Thank you, Karen. I wanted to bring attention to the comment from NABP on tying synonyms together when one of them happens to be, for example, one that is limiting to a verified TLD, for example. Can I go ahead and comment on that?
Yes, you can. Please.
I'll take that as oh, perfect. Thank you. I just want to say that I think the idea of tying synonyms together should be left outside of the string similarity issue. It's oftentimes we find ourselves thinking that synonyms are very similar in meaning in the fact that they can be tied within the same industry. But if you go outside of one industry and you look at the meaning for a certain, well, synonym in this case, it can have a very different meaning. That is why I don't support this comment from NADP, but I think we need to keep these two separate very much so. Thank you.
Michael, can you, just to further the dialogue, can you give an example? NABP gave several examples in their thing. Can you give an example with yours?
Right off the top of my head, I wish I had prepared that beforehand, but at the current time, I cannot. However, I can take that back to the aspect of doctor and synonyms. A doctor and physician. We looked at it was discussed, and I think it was raised by individuals that had string similarity objections filed against them, that, for example, dot doctor applies not just to a medical field, but also to doctorates or people who have graduated with a doctorate or basically individuals that are not just limited to medicine, whereas physician may just be limited to medicine in certain aspects. You can't tie the two together when one definition is so can be applied so far and stretched out that they can't be taken two together. What's the proper English word? They can't be tied exactly together just because they have a correlation somewhere down the line. Each word has a very wide meaning, and limiting those in any aspect across the several thousands of languages that exist across the world is too limiting in this aspect, and therefore I cannot see us even trying to develop any kind of criteria in regards to this.
Thank you, Michael. I do remember the prior discussions in the industry now that you mentioned that with regard to the doctor, use of the term doctor. I see we had a queue. Well, I thought we had a queue, but I see Gigi still has her hand up. Yes, please go ahead, Gigi, please.
Hi, Gigi Levine for the record. I appreciate Michael's comments, and I do recognize that doctor, for instance, can mean more than physician. But one of the factors that the NABP comments brought into consideration was that perhaps if there is the potential for confusion, that the potentially confusing strings could be operated in a way that is equally restrictive or somehow is designated for a specific community, such as separate from physicians, but that doctors that are health practitioners would have some sort of certification, some sort of criteria establishing them as legitimate medical doctors. So maybe they could, those two strains could continue to exist side by side, but that the new one that is potentially confusingly similar could have similar restrictions in place to protect consumers, particularly in a highly regulated industry. So I'm not exactly sure logistically how that would work, but it seems like something worth considering.
Thank you, Gigi. excuse me. Alan, next?
Yep. Thank you very much. I think I tend to agree, and I'm not quite sure how I come out on really making the decision, but I can't accept the words that Paul used of because, and I'm paraphrasing him, because one word is far wider than the other, you cannot apply restrictions to the wider one, to doctor, which would limit its use to only medical doctors. We're talking about balancing the public interest and consumer safeguards versus the business aspects of being able to use the TLD doctor in a wider way and being able to give access to it to people who are not medical doctors. And this is a balance, and I think it's a decision we have to make. It's not a given that we have to go in one direction or the other. So it's not as clear as because the definitions are not the same, we cannot use the same restrictions. That is a conscious decision we're going to have to look at for those types of cases. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And just for the record, I believe that was Michael Fleming that was making the comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Doctors, not Paul.
Sorry, I lost connectivity at one point and lost track of who was speaking.
We're used to blaming Paul for lots of things. I guess the cue disappeared then when I said that. Okay. everybody's hand went down. All right. So, with regard to string similarity, we seem to be have a divergence of opinion here. Let me throw this question out. Specifically, the SOAR tool. Do we have anyone on the call today who feels that the SOAR tool should be retained for future rounds? Alan, please go ahead.
For those of us who never actually applied for a GTLD, can someone tell us what the SOAR tool is?
Paul, go for it.
Thanks. So Paul McGrady for the record. Alan, I'm going to give you a highly editorialized view of what the SOAR tool is. The SOAR tool was an algorithm, or is, I'm not sure if it's still on the website or not, where you plug in two different strings, and the algorithm was supposed to tell you what ICANN thought about their similarity. You would get a similarity match, and then there was they did not tie that to anything like over 65, and you're not going to get it, or over 85, no way. They just gave you a number. It was a number without any reference to what that number meant. And then you were supposed to divine what that number meant, and then you were supposed to advise clients whether or not to apply based upon the number that was generated by the algorithm and what you felt about it, because there was nothing to think about it because there was no charge. However, at the end of the day, the string similarity panels did not use the SOAR algorithm, and the outcomes were not in any way reasonably related to what the SOAR algorithm, the numbers that it generated, and there were all kinds of things that the algorithm did not anticipate. So essentially the tool was worse than useless because it sort of not only didn't help you in any concrete way give advice to clients, it actually encouraged people to give wrong-headed advice because at the end of the day, ICANN didn't actually use the tool that they had deployed. So I think that it is worse than useless because it is counterproductive, and it should be thrown into the same ash heap that digital archery has been thrown onto. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Kirk?
Hi, I think Paul gives the SOAR algorithm a short shrift. So the idea behind it was to provide an objective measure. And so it was developed so far as being able to provide those scores that Paul discusses. And then the community decided that an objective measure was mathematical measure of similarity. You know, in use in many, many instances in our society, was not an appropriate tool that we should use human judgment instead. So the development on the SOAR algorithm, stopped at that point. But we said, you know, you can use it for, you know, ICANN said that you could use it forever you want. But the fact that the scores, differed markedly from what the similarity panel found, I think is probably more of an indictment of the similarity panel and not the algorithm. And that if we could finish the development on an algorithm, which, like I said, has been done many, many times historically in the past for a similarity, if that could be done, just imagine having an objective measure where you apply for a TLD, and you can get your measure, and the development's gone far enough that we determine, okay, if you have a score, you know, if the score was over 95 or 98 or something like that, then it'd be too similar or something like that. So that, you know, given all the problems we had in the new GTL program and the subjective measures and tests that just didn't work out from a consistency standpoint, how valuable such a tool would be. So we did that initial development, but then you know, after community feedback, development was just stopped before it was done. So I don't think it's exactly correct to make a determination on the value of a tool that wasn't finished.
Thanks, Thanks, Kurt. Are you, may I ask, are you advocating for continued development?
Oh, me? So I'm a, you know, I'm a former physicist. I'm a big believer in things like that, and I'm a big believer in making things objective rather than subjective. And I think it would be workable, and I think it would be a worthwhile you know, if it worked, it'd be money well spent, and if it didn't work, it wouldn't be money wasted because it'd be worth the trial.
Okay.
But I recognize I'm in a pretty steep minority.
All right. Anyone else have anything to add to this conversation in regard to SWORD or a tool? I'm assuming that's an older hand, Kurt. Michael?
A clarifying question. I think our next topic or our next set of questions on whether or not we should analyze similarity in GTLDs with the way they are handled in CCTLDs, i.e. the fast track, mm-hmm. doesn't that kind of address kind of an alternative to the SWORD algorithm?
Yes, it does. So perhaps we should move on to there if we are.
Okay, and I'm in support of getting rid of the SWORD tool as well, just for the record.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Okay, let's pick on up with our questions and go on to the next question, which is 3.4.2. Should the approach for string similarities in GTLDs be harmonized with the way in which they were handled in CCTLDs, the fact track process as described. The SSAC referenced advice provided in SAC 60, comment on examining the user experience implications of active variant TLDs report, July 2013. SAC 84, SSAC comments on guidelines for the extended process similarity review panel for the IDN CCTLD fast track process, 31 August 2016, and SAC 89, SSAC response to CCNSO comments on SAC 84, 12 December 2016. Nominat and ALAC supported this harmonization. Harmonization of approach would be ideal, perhaps an opportunity to work on policy between the CCNSO and the GNSO. Yes, see response to 3.1.1 ALAC. I don't have 3.1.1 in front of me, but I can dial it up. I would like to ask if any of our colleagues who are more intimately familiar with the CC NSO process than perhaps others of us more embedded in the GNSO are would care to speak to this and perhaps educate us, some of us, on the CCNSO process, how this fast track process, how it works, and what harmonization might look like. Noting that Rubens is not here today, do we have any other CCNSO colleagues on the call today? Looks like perhaps not. Several people are typing. Emily's got the ALAC response here. 3.1.1. The recommendation on string confusion is one that must be enhanced. Singular and plural versions related strings are problematic. Things. That being said, as discussed in relation to the CCNSO extended process similarity review panel, document for strings that are inherently confusing in their own right, but for which strong irrevocable policies mitigating against confusion in full domain names delegation should be considered. Yes. There seems to be support from this, the feedback that we got, and I apologize for not confirming with Rubens that he would be here today and taking our colleague for granted. I will be speaking with him later today and perhaps will request of him a primer via the email list. Does anyone have any specific questions for Rubens that I could put to him this evening or otherwise on the list for the with regard to this, or any concerns regard to this process? Michael?
It's Karen, and I'm sorry to be talking a lot today, but I have a lot of interest in this topic. I have a question in regards to the kind of the concept of harmonizing GTLD similarity consideration with the CCTLD fast track and how it's considered there. In the case that we did such, that we did kind of harmonize this, would there be a kind of an appeals process, for example, or something that we could possibly challenge the result that we would receive from the, I believe it's a panel, that basically where our TLD would be denied or based upon its similarity with an existing TLD, or from the result of applied for TLD being applied, being placed in a certain contention set. Thank you.
Aubrey, please.
Hi, this is Aubrey speaking. Just a brief historical point on the notion of appeal. That was something that did come out of one of the subgroups during the time that the application guidebook or the draft guidebook was being discussed. And there was a rather strong request for appeals on the decisions of the review panel, but that was a notion that was denied by the staff at the time that was working on the AGB, because they said it would be too difficult to fit into the process and the orderly, sequential nature of the process. So that was one of the few where there was no way to come back and try to get a further discussion of a decision made. So that's certainly something in the implementation that this group could certainly strongly suggest if it had consensus on it, that this mechanism, whatever is decided for both the decision of what's a plural, what's a not, and perhaps what's in a contention set or what's not, is something, especially based upon pluralization, would be something that's subjected to some kind of, you know, redress mechanism, appeal, questioning, what have you. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Michael, does that answer your question? Are there any follow-up questions? All right, thanks. We will follow up with Rubens, our resident CCNSO expert, and continue to work through this. Our next question is regards specifically, excuse me, singulars and plurals. It is, scroll my document here. Question 3.4.3. The working group and the wider community have raised concerns specifically related to singulars and plurals of the same word. Do you have suggestions on how to develop guidance on singulars and plurals that will lead to predictable outcomes? With providing for more predictability of outcomes unfairly prejudice the rights of applicants or others? We have, again, this core group of registries, the BRG, Validaeus, Business Constituency, Google, and Verified Consortium, all supporting singulars and plurals in the same language and script, going into a contention set. We had, and I'm, for the sake of time here, because we're closing in on our hour, I'm going to skip reading verbatim these comments. We have Jing Guyon stating that singulars and plurals should be prohibited, but he didn't provide a proposal. The ALAC focused on concerns about user confusion and a need for mitigation and fair resolution. We did have a proposal from the registries, as we will recall. And again, theirs was based on language and script. The registry's proposal differentiated between, different languages. The registry proposal said if there were singulars and plurals in, one in English, one in French, then they would not necessarily go into contention. So that is the theme there. Is our feelings here in this group that is correct, that we would want to see singulars and plurals, same language, same script, put in contention? Michael, go ahead.
Sorry, Karen, I'm really hounding the mic today. But coming from a region where English is not native spoken language and is probably maybe 30% of the language spoken by even myself during one day, I'm really for pushing only one, for putting these two together in the same set to only allow one victor in the end, because it's just so confusing for non-native English speakers out there. And I know this is, you probably heard me say this before, but just to make sure it's on the record, it's in phonetics, it's in connotation and everything. You ask a regular Japanese person any day of the week, they don't know the difference between cars and car because it just doesn't exist in their own native language. And when we look at that aspect, I kind of have to say I'm against throwing these together in the same contention set when they're in different languages. So in that aspect, I wouldn't put together the equivalent translation in another language in the same contention set. But I also have a question in regards to something, to one of the comments Google made.
Michael?
In regards to, I'm sorry?
Michael.
Okay.
Yeah. Can I interrupt?
Yes.
Well, I just want to ask for some clarification, and perhaps it's because I have a cold and my brain isn't processing right. Are you advocating for not putting car and cars in a contention set, or are you advocating for, as Anne is noting here in the comment, putting star in contention set with its, I'm assuming Anne, and I will not try to pronounce it because I'm very bad at French, and its French translation of étoile. Can you just clarify a little bit, Michael, what you're...
So, I'm sorry about that, Karen. Let me just be very clear. I am very much for supporting having singular and plurals in the same contention set, not in different languages. If you look at the comments that are provided here, they're kind of separated in between having singular and plurals put together in the same contention set, as well as having singular and plurals plus their equivalents in other languages in the same contention set. So I would be for supporting the notion of having singular and plurals within the same language together, but not necessarily having their English sorry, they're having their equivalent in another language thrown in the same contention set.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Then I also had a clarifying question on that in regards to something Google suggested about allowing for exceptions, but I would just be really curious about understanding what exactly an exception would be in this case. But I'm not going to hog the mic any longer. I'll let you go down the queue.
Okay. I don't see any of our colleagues from Google on the call, but if I do, I can reach out. We can reach out to them. But we've got a queue here. Gigi, go ahead.
Hi, this is Gigi. And one example that comes to mind when it would be confusingly similar to have the same word in another language coexisting is with an international community. Since a community is supposed to extend to a global scope, then that community would extend theoretically into multiple languages. And if you had someone else with the same string in another language, that would be confusing with that community GTLD. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gigi. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I just like a little bit of clarity. When we're talking about words in multiple languages or similar things like that, you know, meaning is the same, are we talking about as a result of some string comparison initial study, as we're now suggesting that singular and plural, for instance, might be caught by the original review, or are we talking about as a result of an objection being filed and deemed to be the same, as happened with, you know, Portuguese and English hotels or something like that? So are we looking at getting there through any way or just through one of them that we are talking about right now?
To my mind, we were talking about evaluation and putting them into contention sets, but I would welcome
But you could get into a contention set as a result of an objection.
That is true.
And I mean, the current rules only looked at physical similarity, visual similarity, through the original path, but then considered other things because of objections. And I'm asking the question: Are we ruling out the objection process also here by saying they should not be in the same contention set? I'm not arguing for one or the other. I'm just want clarity of what we're talking about.
Michael, are you wanting to address Alan?
Yeah, I want to jump back in on that. Because my understanding of what we are doing here is basically based upon the application, and well, if you want to take this down the SWORD path, or you want to take it down the CCTLD harmonization path, or however, if IDNs are thrown into are thrown together with their equivalent and they're in the same contention set, ultimately, doesn't that look at only one of them being delegated in the end? That depends on how,
yes.
So yes would be the answer, but perhaps it depends on how ultimately the TLD is delegated. I want to look at .suhan, sorry, the Japanese for .shop and .shop itself. I think originally in this round they were set in the same contention set together, but in the end I think it was, I can't remember how we got to the result, but there was a ruling somewhere down the line that's saying basically the IDN for the Japanese for .shop and the English .shop should be considered indifferently together. Perhaps Christina would have more input in regards to this. I can't remember exactly, but to me, they're exactly different applicants. So they're exactly different words. Sorry, they're two different words, and they have two different target audiences, and this kind of goes against the idea of allowing for, you know, IDNs and kind of, I think, puts a close on universal acceptance in some ways. I could really argue that issue.
Thank you, Michael. Just looking in the chat, we've got a good conversation going on here that I have lost track on. I'm trying to see if there's anything that needs to be read into the record, but I believe it's being copied into the notes. Again, it is this discussion of are we eliminating IDNs here? Applicants. All right. Is anyone else mindful of the time now? We are at 1 minute before the top of the hour. Does anyone else want to speak to this issue or the other issues we've talked about today before we close? I see Cheryl has already signed off for the day. Yes, Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. We may not, by the way, we may not be eliminating IDNs. We may be eliminating ASCII.
Yes.
It could go that way also. I have a concern about how we're doing this, and that we're spending a lot of time talking about the comments, but it's not clear how we're going to come to any resolution on recommendations. At some point we have to start deliberating, saying, do these comments have merit? Are we going to suggest changes in the rules because of them? And I get the feeling that as we're going over them, we're going from one to the other, and we're not at that stage, and I don't know how we're going to go back to it and actually make decisions based on the comments. So I guess I have a concern that we're doing a lot of work and we're having really good discussions, but we're not getting towards the end point of making recommendations on what to do for the next round or whatever.
Yes, we thank you, Alan. And believe it or not, there is a method to our madness. And I will let Aubrey, who is the author of that methodology of our madness, explain it to you because she's the one that taught it to us, the leaders. Aubrey, go ahead.
Thank you, Aubrey speaking. And sorry that it's after the end of the appointed hour, but yes, the idea is that now we're doing basically the due diligence through this past, doing the due diligence on the comments. In some of the conversations in some places, you can see the beginning of a consensus on a way to go. In some of them, you can't yet. And now, essentially, one of the things I didn't mention earlier is that the policy staff is basically working on a compendium of where we are on each issue, what has been discussed, where there does seem to be something approaching resolution, and other places where there's discordance. The idea is that this will be coming up now as we finish this discussion and we've exhaustively talked about things. We go into each of the work teams doing its third and deciding pass through the issues, that basically having come up with the questions in the first pass, having read the community's responses in the second pass, now it's time to take all those discussions you've had about it and say, okay, are we going to change what exists, or have we seen this essentially enough cause to change it, or are we going to stick with what was the case before? If we're going to change it, then in what way are we changing it? So the next cycle through these things, having exhaustively discussed them now, is when we have to come to the consensus point on everything. Always starting from, there is an existing policy, there is an existing implementation, does it need to be changed based upon what we've discussed and learned? Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I hope that makes sense to you, Alan. Let's see a check mark from Ann. And now that we are 3 minutes past the hour, I will wish you all a good rest of your day, evening, and look forward to talking to you next time. And look for some follow-up on the list with regard to the CCNSO Fast Track And as Julie has reminded us in the chat, our next call is scheduled for Tuesday the 10th at 2000 UTC. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.